on to MERS Monday, the weekly political podcast produced by the MERS Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, and we got a special year-end interview with Governor Jennifer Granholm to conclude this year's editions of MERS Mondays. Really good interview here. For the next 15 minutes, hear me interview the governor about such things as the lobbyists in Michigan and if they have too much power, what can be done to improve state government. She's going to suggest something that has been out there before, a little radical, and you'll get to listen to what that is. And also Sarah Palin. Is Sarah Palin qualified to be president? The governor of our state says no. So let's listen to the interview and find out why. Here it is, Jennifer Granholm.
First thing I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of talk here in Lansing that Michigan politics is broken. Michigan government is broken. Do you feel like Michigan government is broken?
I think there are a lot of things that could be fixed, but some of them require constitutional amendment. I think that politics in general is broken in this country insofar as there is unlimited secret spending that goes on that's not reported, and therefore you don't know who's accountable to whom in the decisions that they make. I think that part is broken in Michigan and nationally. But I do think that you will see with a sort of one-party government next time less acrimony because of that, and maybe people will view that, therefore, it's not broken. But I do think the way our government is funded, the way the funding streams are structured, needs to be fixed.
Okay. But as far as, like, let's say, unicameral legislature, term limits, I mean, you hear these bandied about all the time here in Lansing. Either of those, I know they'd need constitutional changes, but do you see or would you like to see any of those happen?
You know, honestly, I look at term limits. I voted for term limits, and I've gone back and forth about this because of the inexperience both that I brought to dealing with the legislature and certainly that the legislature itself now has. But I noticed that in Washington, they're going through the exact same kinds of, flip-flops to get anything done. I don't mean flip-flop as in changing positions, but the contortions that have to occur in Washington to get something through Congress are equally challenging or more. And so it leads me to the conclusion that it's not just term limits. I do think a part-time legislature is a good thing. Most states have it. There's no reason why Michigan needs to have a full-time legislature. You know, for a variety of reasons, I think it would be best to have a part-time legislature. Does having them here full-time serve to exacerbate conflict? Yes, if there is, if you've got full-time opposition to the executive, I think that does, because it just gives more people more time to figure out how to block or not necessarily work together.
What's been your experience with lobbyists here in Michigan? What would your postscript be on lobbyists here?
I think lobbyists have too much power. Every loophole in our tax code has a lobbyist that's attached to it. The lobbyists become personal friends with people, and therefore it's difficult for legislators to vote against somebody that has been a friend or has helped to fund their campaigns. The lobbyists have a huge amount of influence over the legislature, and I think that's unfortunate. Not that they're not nice people, but they have a disproportionate, far disproportionate impact over legislation than everyday citizens do. It's why, you know, those who come to Lansing should be the voice for everyday citizens and not end up being the voice for the lobbyists. But time spent here in Lansing means that you end up socializing with lobbyists, and that's unfortunate. I've never gone to lunch with a lobbyist.
Really?
I've made it a policy to bring my own. I bring my lunch every day to work. I don't allow lobbyists to buy meals for me, and I haven't spent a lot of time with them. It's one of the reasons why in Lansing, you know, I'm not that popular among the lobbying community because I haven't spent personal time with them, but they have a far greater impact than everyday citizens would imagine.
Is there anything we can do about that?
Well, I think transparency in who is funding campaigns is critical. You know, the lobbyists, they're doing their job. They are doing a good job at it, and they represent companies and those who want certain benefits. And those companies and people or corporations who want certain benefits or a tax provision written on their behalf, they can give unlimited amounts of money, undisclosed, to a political party and have the political party run ads on their behalf. Unlimited amounts of money. And they can come directly from the corporate checkbook. That is wrong. And that is not a way that the citizens can feel like their elected representatives are really representing them and not representing the interests of a lobbyist.
How do you feel the media has treated you in these last 8 years?
You know, I think the media is doing their job. You know, there's some who have, you know, had a personal, you know, for a long time standing at disagreement with me, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And I think that happens to every governor. So I appreciate it. I have appreciated over the years the ability to have access to the media and to have our mutual interests of making sure that readers or watchers of TV or listeners to radio are educated about what's going on in government. I'm not going to complain at all about the way I've been covered.
Now, just so you know, I didn't come up with this question. Somebody suggested I ask this to you so it doesn't come across self-serving, but who has gotten it right the most?
Do you want me to say MERS or Kyle Malin has?
That'd be a great promo, let me tell you.
Who has gotten it right the most? Do you want me to really list a reporter
yes.
that I think has
yes.
been fair?
Please.
You know, if I had to list people that I think have been fair, I mean, I do think you have been fair, Kyle. I really do. And I think that, you know, Peter Luke, for example, has been fair. And Chris Christoph reports in a very fair manner. Kathy Barks Hoffman does the same. So there's a number of people who have been, you know, who are not, whose own personal issues don't color the way, you know, the way things are written. You know, John Lindstrom, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Part of the criticism that we hear in Lansing is that Dan Mulhern has too much power in Lansing, and he tells you what to do. I wanted you to address that because that's a popular sentiment in Lansing, and I'd like you to address it.
I don't understand where that comes from unless people assume that a husband has a disproportionate amount of power over a wife. I mean, I don't know where that's coming from. It's a curious thing that people would say that. And, you know, I mean, he is my best friend, and I do consult with him in terms of the family, and if there's something related to state government and leadership issues, you know, doing the 360 evaluations of people inside of state government, that's what his expertise is, and that's where he brings a lot of added value to state government. But I'm not sure where people are going with that he's somehow a puppeteer or something like that. It's a little bit insulting to both of us.
Well, yeah, and I wanted you to address it for that reason. And let me just tell you the scenario. This is what I've heard. I don't know this firsthand, that the governor will make a decision one day, will go home, and then magically the next day have a completely different opinion on what she had just decided the day before.
And I don't even know what you're talking about with that.
Yeah, okay.
That's an absurd generalization. And without a specific, it's impossible to respond to.
Sure.
And moreover, that suggests that I check with him on every big decision and that he persuades me in a different direction. And that's just, I mean, it's bull.
Okay.
It's just bull.
Very good. Who did you support in the Democratic gubernatorial primary this year?
I specifically didn't weigh in the primary.
No, but you did vote, though. You did vote, though.
Oh, I did. I voted, and I'm not going to talk about that. But
it's long over, though. It's okay.
Huh?
I said it's long
over. It's okay. No, thanks, Kyle. I'm not gonna do that at this stage of the game. But I think that the candidates could have all done well, and I helped them all.
Looking back at it, do you think you could have done better, or do you think Virge Bonero could have done better had you helped him a little more in the general election?
You know, I think that anybody who sidled up to the governor, who's been the person who's been the governor during the most challenging part of Michigan's economic history in recent memory, you know, that, I don't want to hurt anybody. So, I have to respect. I did what they asked me to do, and I certainly respected their need to establish themselves independent of me.
Okay. You know, obviously as the economy got worse as you became governor, your popularity went down. That's only natural. But did you sense that going, you know, when you were out in the public, did you feel like the public's reaction towards you when they saw you out in person was different as the economy got worse?
Sure.
Did you really? Give me an example.
Well, I think, did I tell you this story, Kyle? I was in Saginaw. I may have mentioned this, and cut me off if I have.
Okay.
But I was in Saginaw. This is just around the time that Delphi had declared bankruptcy. And I was at a coffee shop, and I was just leaving the coffee shop, and this fellow was walking in, and something about his expression caused me to put my hand on his arm and say, you know, hi, how are you doing? And he said, oh, Ms. Granholm, I never thought I would see a governor here in this little coffee shop. And, you know, I said, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know him, but something about his demeanor caused me to ask the question. And, you know, he started spilling that he, you know, was a Delphi guy and that he had worked there for decades. And, you know, he didn't, this is a big guy and he had a leather jacket on and his hair in a ponytail. All of a sudden he started to cry.
Oh.
We were in this little foyer of the coffee shop and, we were surrounded by glass. So I know, you know, he's a big guy and he didn't want to be crying in public. It was clear. And I looked at him and I said, I'm so sorry. He said, can you please do something to prevent this bankruptcy? And I said to him, you know, no governor has the ability to negotiate trade agreements or to stop a company from going into bankruptcy because of, you know, circumstances beyond the workers' control and beyond the governor's control. And when I started to explain that there are things beyond a governor's control, he looked at me and he said, yeah, whatever.
Oh.
And he brushed by me and went straight to the men's room. And I use that as an example because there has been nobody who's wanted to wave a magic wand and fix it more than me, and where the tools are just not at a governor's disposal in the circumstances that we find ourselves in. But people want the governor to fix it.
Yep.
And you can do what you can, certainly, but preventing the bankruptcies of Chrysler and General Motors, there just isn't anything any good governor could have done. But it doesn't matter. That explanation doesn't matter. People want the governor to prevent them from being in pain. And you're the sort of symbol of that.
Yeah.
So I say all of that to say, Kyle, that clearly, we've been through a huge amount of pain. And it's understandable that, people who aren't following the details and who don't, you know, aren't looking at whether, you know, the governor intervened to prevent bankruptcy. You know, they don't care about that detail so much. They just know that she wasn't able to prevent their pain.
Right.
And that has been a real, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge for me personally because I want to fix their pain, and I haven't been able to do that for them. But I understand why they voted the way they did in November and why they feel humanly like they want to see it fixed.
Right.
So all of that's a very long explanation for saying, yeah, I've definitely noticed the difference in how I'm viewed.
Really quickly, last question. Is Sarah Palin qualified to be president?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not saying that a governor wouldn't be qualified because I think a governor has a tremendous amount to offer to a presidency given the executive experience. And that executive experience, I think, is the best preparation to be president. But she was only governor for a couple of years and left in the middle. And you don't leave when things are tough. You know, I say that from firsthand experience.
Right.
You stick it out and you make sure you do what you've got to do. The fact that she left in the middle of her first term, I just think disqualifies her.
Really?
At least okay. She doesn't disqualify her technically, but I think that makes her less qualified to be president.
That's going to do it for MERS Monday. I'd like to thank the Governor Jennifer Granholm, for taking 15 minutes to talk with us here on MERS Monday. Special thanks goes out to The Ghost Is Dancing for Battles On, the music bookending this podcast, and Rita Lamaro for sporting me some money there at that evil office snack box. Thing is just... deadly. I think that's going to be a New Year's resolution. Cut that thing out. Anyway, that's going to do it for this year for MERS Mondays. We'll see you in 2011. Have a great holiday.